The final primary of 2018 happens today in New York. Really interesting because there are strong progressive contenders up and down the state ballot. The incumbent governor, Andrew Cuomo, is facing a challenge from actor Cynthia Nixon, who already took the Working Families Party ballot line away from him. Her running mate for lieutenant governor, Jumaane Williams, has gotten endorsed by the New York Times. The last person who gave Cuomo a run for his money, law professor Zephyr Teachout, she is now in an open primary for attorney general. And down the ballot in the state legislative races, there are many, many progressives and even one socialist running to unseat Democrats who split from their party to caucus with Republicans. Joining us to sort it all out is Bob Hanley. He's a reporter with the Chief Leader, which covers New York's public unions and civil service, also the national affairs correspondent for WBGO. Thanks for getting on the phone this morning.
Pleasure.
Let's start with the governor, Andrew Cuomo. He keeps getting these high-profile challenges from the left. Why? What's the beef with him?
I think it has to do with the slide that is really underreported in terms of the conditions of how people are living. I did a piece looking at what's happened to the poverty rate in New York State since Mario Cuomo, his father, was in, and the current moment. And what you see is out of the 61 counties, childhood poverty and adult poverty have increased with the exception of three counties. This all goes back to the fact that there really hasn't been a recovery. And so a lot of what we see, particularly in upstate New York, is just continued decline. Often the manufacturing base is so eroded that all that's left is either hospitals or prisons, which is a result, of course, of the mass incarceration industry boom. And so that's where we are. And so the action, the reason why the action's on the left is because we've tried everything else.
Yeah. On substantive policy issue, what separates Cuomo from Cynthia Nixon?
Well, I think that it has more to do with the question of style, in the sense of, you know, originally when he came in, he tried to feign to the right and kind of take a Reagan stance when it came to the unions. Be it my way or the highway, very much, an alpha male type. And then as the Zephyr Teachout, of course, as you mentioned, took a run at him and did really well with very little money, got like some 35%. And that kind of got him to tack to the left. And, of course, what happened was nationally there was significant political percentage in being perceived as someone going up against another New Yorker, Donald Trump. And so it aligned itself where it made sense for him to go in that direction. But the underlying questions about what's happened here in the state in terms of economic development, it still remained the same. There's still the issue of the fact that there was major corruption trials where people close to him, his lieutenants, were convicted for pay-to-play schemes involving, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars of economic development, which seemed to go to donors. I mean, that pay-to-play culture, which is really just across the entire United States, is very strong in New York. And so as much as he's gotten some of the headline issues, like he's very strong on reproductive rights and, you know, he's standing up to Donald Trump. But if you look at the way that his concept of how do you deal with this huge wealth gap, well, an income disparity, what he's done just recently is support unions. But the kind of radical transformation that's required is so much deeper and so much a threat to the power base and his funding base, he can't even come close to it. I mean, what's instructive is to look what happened with Ms. Ocasio-Cortez's challenge with Mr. Crowley, the congressman. That's a district that's in the Bronx and Queens. This was a incumbent Democrat who was being touted as a potential speaker, who lost was so out of touch with what was going on. You know, the United Way does this national survey. They look at something called the ALICE profile. That's asset limited, income constrained, but employed. Those are people that are struggling every week, households that are having a hard time. Well, while the Democratic Party was taking care of donors like the Republican Party, what happened in the Bronx is 70% of the households are struggling week to week. In Queens, it's 50%. So that's why I tell you that, yes, Cuomo has gotten the ability to kind of affect at the superficial level, but this systematic need to remake the economy, he's not even close.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could explain some of the arcana of electoral politics in New York to us. As I understand it, if Cynthia Nixon loses, she's still going to be on the ballot, but on the line of a different party.
Right. And this is the legacy issue of fusion politics. The other thing to understand is that this state's turnout is really poor historically. And so we're at the bottom in terms of turnout, and we have a very difficult process in terms of participation. We don't have any of the enlightened things that we see in places like Oregon and this ability. There's no sense of universal suffrage. New York State makes it very hard to participate.
You have three separate primaries, one for local elections, one for national, right, and one for state, all in the same year.
Right. Right, and one of the things, I mean, we've even seen situations in city council races, and that job pays six figures, where what they do is very cynically, we'll have a situation where an incumbent will resign without finishing their term so that the replacement can kind of be appointed, and that individual runs in a special primary, and maybe 10% of the people actually turn out, and that person will be in that job at least under term limits that we have for 8 years. So that's really how decrepit the electoral politics is. It's instructive to know that Mayor de Blasio, for instance, was first elected in a primary that I think maybe under 20% of Democrats were engaged in. So that has a real long-term problem when it comes to governing, because you really don't have any kind of mandate. And that's how marginal electoral politics has become. So it really is in crisis, actually.
But the question of fusion balloting, I don't think this exists in any other state. So how does someone lose her primary and stay on the ballot?
Well, because there was a designation from another party. And so theoretically, I believe that's true with Mr. Crowley, too, that if you have this, we have the opportunity. And in one way, this is kind of progressive. So we have the Green candidate, Mr. Hawkins, for instance, that's going to be on. And so if you, as long as your ballot line continues to get, I think it's like 50 or 60, 90,000 votes, then the ballot line stays in place. And in one way, that does always give the minority or folks that are committed and have passion about their cause access to politics. I mean, so from that standpoint, it is a window for people to continue to participate.
Right. I think the concern would be if Cynthia Nixon has a very strong showing but doesn't win the primary but does stay on the ballot, it could put her in spoiler role and get a Republican into the governor's mansion.
Right. And we have an independent, Stephanie Miner is looking like she's going to step in, a politician from upstate New York. And so is there a calculus by which a Republican gets elected? I do think, though, that we do have to keep in mind that there's other dynamics of ballot in 2018 in terms of the congressional races. New York State upstate Republicans that were incumbents, like Collins, who's run into trouble with the with prosecutors related to allegations of insider trading. We're having races that were never close, that are situations where they're leading Democratic or certainly even. And so that is going to have an impact, I think. So I think that strengthens the Democratic contender for governor, no matter who it is.
All the way down the ballot, you have a lot of progressives, a couple of self-described socialists running at state legislative seats that are held by Democrats who at one point or another peeled off and joined something called the Independent Democratic Caucus, meaning, as I understand it, they gave Republicans a majority. They caucused with Republicans in the state Senate. What's going on?
Well, this is, again, this factionalism. For quite a while, the Republicans have held the Senate. The Assembly's been lopsided Democrats for a long time. And in the Senate, what happened was there was a brief period where Democrats did get the majority, but folks like, you don't want to get too in the weeds here, but like Pedro Espada, these were Democrats that saw an opportunity, and then they kind of, there was, I guess, three or four ended up being indicted and convicted for corruption charges. And in that period of time, what ended up happening was the faction split off, led by Jeff Klein, a state senator, a Democrat, to create this this kind of ruling arrangement where they would sit with the Republicans, which did indeed extend the period of time of Republican control. It also had this other thing of really putting, like, there's been a big drive to try to update New York State's reproductive rights laws, which really need to be upgraded, especially in light of the assault they're receiving from Washington with the likely nomination of Mr. Kavanaugh to the high court. And those kinds of things have just been stymied. I mean, I heard that, for instance, there's been a big push to try to reform voting rights in the state to try to make it more accessible. And the only thing the Republicans would permit through was that you could get registered to vote if you were buying a gun. Okay, so that's the only kind of voter reform that got through. So that's why our politics are really stuck. And so there is a sense that these individuals, you know, Cuomo did say at one point, under pressure, I think, from the Nixon candidacy, to these independent Democrats to come back to the fold, and they did. There was a kind of detente, if you will, an agreement that there would be no challenge to these individual Democrats who came back from this arrangement, this axis of control. But they did get primary challenge. So the governor was not able to, because of this wave on the left, was not able to enforce party discipline, which does have some implications down the line. So, yes, there are serious challenges. There's huge amounts of money being spent. But, again, my concern is that we just won't see the electorate engaged. I mean, even the Ocasio-Cortez victory, when you look at the percentage of people engaged, was fairly anemic.
Yeah. Is it from afar, it's easy to see everything as a retread of Bernie Hillary 2 years later.
Right.
Do you think it's reflecting those broader rifts in the Democratic Party, or is this really specific to what you're describing in New York State?
No, I mean, I think particularly if you drill down in the case of Crowley, Congressman Crowley, when you look at, I mean, the genius of the Ocasio-Cortez campaign was that she ran on issues. She didn't mention Donald Trump at all. And she focused in on the fact that the political machine that supported Mr. Crowley was composed of lawyers that actually prey on the poor. And I mean that not abstractly. I mean, they're the people driving people out of their homes. They're the people that we have a system of elected judges that control inheritances and surrogate court. And this is the thing. This is like third world, but it happens. This is New York State. And what ends up happening is these lawyers in the clubhouse get close to the judges that they nominally, nominate, but no one runs against them. And they get control of people who don't have a last will and testament, which is an awful lot of working class people. And then they proceed to bleed the estate dry with fees. So when she was talking about the predator political class, it wasn't an abstraction. That's kind of the stuff that's been going on across the United States. Pick your party, who's ever in control. But that's the mechanism behind wealth inequality. It's not just happening at the national level. This is woven into our political economy at the grassroots.
Speaking to Bob Hedley, reporter with The Chief Leader, which covers New York's public unions and civil service, about the final primary of primary season. It's underway today in New York State. Bob Hedley, finally, I want to talk about a race in your state that has national implications. There's an open attorney general seat because your last one resigned in a Me Too scandal. Importantly, whoever wins this position has the jurisdiction to investigate and prosecute Donald Trump's businesses, his charities, and a whole lot of his associates. What does the field look like?
Well, I think you have Sean Patrick Maloney, congressman. He decided to throw his hat in the ring. He's spending an awful lot of money. There's some controversy about how he moved money around that was designated for the congressional campaign. Letitia James, who's the public advocate, which is kind of like an elected citywide ombudsman position.
It's the position Bill de Blasio had before he became mayor.
Exactly right. And Alicia R. Eve, and then Zephyr Teachout, who you referenced before, who has been ran for Congress in upstate New York, had a pretty impressive run, but unsuccessful against Governor Cuomo. And so, in this environment, you've had this kind of alignment where Zephyr Teachout, Nixon, and Jumaane Williams have kind of become a ticket, right? And so that's the kind of dynamic that's opened up. You're right, it is, particularly because of Wall Street. I mean, I know it's Donald Trump all the time, but the reality is the last big bank heist that cost $20 trillion of American household wealth. It happened in New York and the Cayman Islands. And so that's another key position. That position really, to a large degree, if it's used appropriately, can really hold Wall Street accountable in ways even that we don't see from the federal government.
Yeah, but if I were Wall Street or real estate interest, that is one race I would be pouring money into to elect someone who would not bring the heat. I mean,
Right, and that did become an issue. One of the things that has become a litmus test is who has or hasn't taken money from. We have something called limited liability corporations, which is an anonymous way that folks can funnel money into a campaign. And many very powerful interests, what they do is they create these LLCs expressly for the purpose of spreading campaign largesse, because it's almost impossible to trace, because it's usually registered to Delaware, which is, I'm sure you're aware, your listeners are aware, is another haven of corruption where there's no transparency. So this, at least this is an issue now. This is something where if you get caught taking money from a landlord, it is radioactive. So we're making progress.
All right. Bob Hennelly, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Pleasure. Take care.
Bob Hennelly is a reporter with The Chief Leader, which covers New York public unions and civil service. He is also the national affairs reporter for WBGO.